Good afternoon, everyone. It was mentioned that I live in the Encinitas Ashram. And about a year ago, we had a call from the city of Carlsbad, which is the city just to the north of us. And they said that they were studying various organizations, fellowships, churches, to see what the city could learn about how to make itself run really well. And they said, "We admire Self-Realization Fellowship so much, we know you've really got it together. Everything is so beautiful, and the members of your church that we come in contact with are so wonderful. What's your secret? You know, how do you do that?" So I said, "Well, if you want my own private viewpoint about why the fellowship is so beautiful, and that is that we have, as the president of the fellowship," and then I used an understatement, "someone that we feel is very, very saintly. And that person has kept the message very, very simple, and it's very clear. And if you ask anyone in the fellowship all around the world, what is the message of our president, of the fellowship, they'll give the same answer, that it's love for God, love for each other." And then I said, "We have the techniques of meditation." But Diamata has kept it so simple, hasn't she? Just right on love for God. And if we ask anyone around the world of our members, isn't that wonderful? What is Diamata's message? You just think of her, and the attention goes within, and you just begin to feel love for God. And so this is the subject for today, really. Love for God and how we each have this relationship with God. Guruji said that God is like a great auroral mist moving in space, because we can think of the absolute that way. And how can we have a personal relationship with a great mist? Seems like a mystery or something like this. And yet this absolute, this formless, is so exciting because it's so close. It passes right through us. And the mist can be so caressing, like a cool, refreshing breeze. It touches us. And this presence has the human qualities in it. It's so close. 1 year, 10 or 15 years ago, it was the week before Mother's Day, and a lady spoke to me early in the week and said, "Brother, I'm not coming on Mother's Day." And I said, "Oh, you know, why?" And she said, "It's the only Sunday in the year that I don't come. I come on Christmas, Easter, all the other times, but..." And then she explained that she didn't have the kind of mother that she would have wanted to have, that she could have that relationship with. And this was new for me, because my own mother was so thrilling to me. So I actually wrote to Diamata and got an instant answer back. And it said, "Tell the person to use this as a motivation. If in their own lives they hadn't had this kind of a relationship, let them use this as a motivation to receive those feelings from God." And her words were, "Those tender, loving feelings." And so this formless aspect of God, the infinite, has also these very, very human, tender, loving feelings that we can relate to. And Swami Shyamananda, who was at head of our work in India, big man, came, visited the West in probably 1969 or 70, something like this. And then he met with the monks at our living room, the monks' living room, and we all sat on the floor. And he gave a one-word definition for God. Now, this is a big man. And his one-word definition for God was sweetness. And Guruji said, you know, his chant, "Thou art my life, Thou art my love, Thou art the sweetness which I seek. He said it was always He, the Father behind all fathers, the Mother behind all mothers, the Lover behind all lovers that I sought through incarnations. He is the Lover, big capital L, you know, and we are the Beloved. And when the soul is the Beloved, when the soul meets the greatest Lover in the universe, then the eternal romance begins. Now, a little aside to the men here. Does this sound a little too mushy for the men? No? Good. Because I'll quote a little bit here for the men to show that these tender, loving feelings are our own soul properties. They're very appropriate for men as well as for ladies. And from Shakespeare, The Merchant of Venice, the quality of mercy, talking about these gentle, they're motherly feelings, aren't they? But the quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes. And then it says, 'Tis mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throned monarch better than his crown. It is the attribute of kings. It is an attribute of God himself. So this is a very manly quality, these gentle qualities. Or if we look at the Mahabharata, thousands of years before Jesus, it says one should forgive under any injury. And it begins to talk about these gentle feelings again. Now, it doesn't mean we allow ourselves to be trampled on all the time. It's talking about the feeling of forgiveness. It says, by forgiveness, the universe is held together. Forgiveness is holiness. And it says again, forgiveness is the might of the mighty. Then it goes on to say, forgiveness and gentleness are the qualities of the self-possessed. They represent eternal virtue. We're all souls, men or women, and these tender, loving feelings are very appropriate for men. And in fact, it's what men seek, isn't it? There was a man, saint, a poet, talking about the relationship with God. Again, using some military word, he uses the word wounded, but he said, with his, God's, serenest hand, my neck he wounded and suspended every sense with his caresses. Isn't that sweet? This is what we want. So, God misses our love if we don't give it to him or her. I'd like you to visualize being with your own children. And just a little story to warm us up. A mother told this story about being with her child. Girl was pretty small, I guess. And the mother went up to her this day, put a gruff look on the mother's face, and said, if you don't watch it, I'm going to pick you up and whirl you around and hug you and kiss you. And then she did. She grabbed her daughter and they spun around till they were both dizzy, and then she hugged her and she kissed her. And then the daughter went to the phone and called her dad and told her what had happened and all this kind of thing. And then the mother found later that she would be sitting working at her computer or something, and the daughter would quietly come up behind her and say, I'm not watching it, Mom. And then she'd get up and grab her and turn her around and hug her and kiss her. So this is the relationship that we want with our children. We want to be able to love the children, and we want the children to reciprocate, don't we? We want them to love us. So just visualize for a moment, what is it that each of us does with our children? Do you caress their head or their hair, or what is it? And what do you like them to do to you? How do they show their affection. And don't we all appreciate it when the children do? If they were just running around all the time and we loved them and fed them and cleaned them and they just ran all around, we'd feel something was missing, but we want their love back. So it's the same thing with God. Now, there's a passage in Proverbs which is actually wisdom speaking, but each of us can apply it as if our souls were saying this. And wisdom says, so our souls can say, I was set up from everlasting. And then it goes on to say, from the beginning, before the world was created, before the earth. And then it said, before the heavens. And then it said, before he did any of this creation, then I was by him. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. And so we were there, you know, before the beginning. We were there with God. So he gave us lots of attention, and we gave him or her lots of attention. And this is the thing to remember now when we come down into an incarnation, that this same relationship exists. And we're running around here, and what we want to do is take the time to say, oh, I remember a little bit. I feel a little bit. Intimations of thy presence tremble through my feeling, Guruji said. So we want to be able, as we go through our incarnation, to have a little bit of this sense of God's presence and this love. Dhyamata said, more vital to our happiness and well-being than anything else are these timeless moments spent with him this way. So then, how to give love to God in our meditations, we'll talk about that first and then get into our other aspects of the daily life. We know that the techniques of meditation help take us within, but so many people ask, what do we do beside the techniques? Because we may be at a three-hour meditation at a center or group or temple. We may be having a longer meditation at home. We may be having just a short meditation where we do a little bit of the technique. But what else do we do? And this is where the personal element comes in, the technique, and then the personal element that is more important than the whole science of yoga or as important. And I'll just give five things that we can do, and Guruji has many more things that we can do. We can think of going to the front door of our house first thing in the morning and opening the door. And Guruji has this chant, door of my heart, open wide. So as we're sitting in meditation consciously, we can open ourselves to let the blessings come in. And then you may go to the door, open it, and call your children. Wilt thou come? Wilt thou come? So we can call God. Reveal thyself. Reveal thyself. And one day I was sitting there at a week retreat, really doing what Brother Ananda Moy said not to do last night. I was straining. And it was Monday morning, and I was really going for it. Strain, strain, God come, this kind of thing, you know. And I was sitting there cross-legged. And then it was as if God were standing beside me. I didn't see anything or hear anything. But just the picture came to mind of God standing beside me with a big basket of rose petals, looking down at me, saying, for crying out loud, will you relax? So I just want to dump this thing on you. So that's such a wonderful thing to do, is to relax. We've done the techniques. We've gone as inside as we can. The soul is alone with God. Then what is there for it to do but to love? And one thing to do in the beginning is to relax and receive. because just as we love to love our children, you love to take your hand and caress them, how wonderful it must be for the gurus to see all these meditators and to go around and visit each one wherever we are meditating and just caress our souls. And for God just to let the rain of the multicolored vibrations just pour in so we can simply receive. And it's such a wonderful thing to realize God is loving me now. Guruji said, in fact, it's nearly at the end of the Divine Romance. And he said, "We are thy children. The birthmark of infinity is on our souls. Thy kiss of immortality is on our brows. The blessing of thine outstretched hands rests eternally upon us." So as we are sitting there in meditation, we can just feel, with the hands upturned, the blessings of God's outstretched hands pouring upon us. Let's just feel it right now. And we can sit up and put the hands in that position and just realize that the gurus, the divine ones, are here, supercharging the ether, the atmosphere, that God's hands of blessings are outstretched, and God is bending forward and is kissing each one on the brow. And all we need to do is receive. But then something happens as we're receiving. It waters the love in our own hearts, and it begins to bubble up, and it begins to blossom and open and flower. And the incense of our own love begins to waft upwards. The perfume from our opening flower of our heart and soul begins to go Godward, and there's this two-way flow and this wonderful process of just dwelling there, being in love. Guruji said, "God begins where motion ceases." So after the techniques are over, we're really wanting to get to this very concentrated state where the mind is alert, it's focused, and we are swept up into this love. Now, I'd like to pass on to you an example that Dhyamata gave to the monastics, and I personally found it very, very helpful. I couldn't get a handle on this love thing for a long time. And so she gave a little key in one of the satsangs she gave us, and I was trying it one morning in my room. And she said to take an affirmation. And you probably know what she says very often as an affirmation. "I love thee, Lord. I love thee, Lord." Well, she said that with an affirmation, the way it works is that when we say it initially, we may not feel it. And she said it's like a match. You have to strike it, strike it, strike it. And someday the thing lights. So I was sitting there intellectually, and trying to be really honest now. "I love you." Well, I don't. So, okay, what's the solution here? If I am a soul, okay, let's say I am a soul, then my soul must love God. All right, so then I'm clear here. I, the soul, love you. My soul loves you. So I'm just saying it over and over. My soul loves you. I, the soul, love you. I love you. And something began to happen. I began to feel a tingling in my whole body. And I thought, maybe I do. Maybe this is true. So try it. Well, let's just try it right now. Okay, we don't really need to change our positions, but that's fine. So let's say it right now as an affirmation. I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. And she said, try to feel it in our hearts. I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. And she said, go on saying it, whether we're sitting at our desks or on the busy street. And then she said, let this be your last thought before you go to sleep at night. Try it tonight as you are falling asleep. And if you would like to hear her saying it, listen to A Heart Aflame. It's so beautiful. It sweeps us up into that. So, talking about the stillness now, we're talking about going past motion. We say this very gently, or anything in our own language, and then it becomes simpler and simpler. With the monks, finally she stopped and just said, you, you. The Rubaiyat said, there was a door to which I found no key. There was a veil past which I could not see. Some little talk a while of me and thee there seemed, and then no more of thee and me. And Guruji explains, there seemed to be, in the initial states of meditation, this separateness, this two. But as ecstasy deepened, then there was just ecstasy, being one in the love of God. Guruji said, we may try many ways to find God, but he will elude us until we pour forth great love to him from our hearts. So this is so precious, to be able to get up in the morning and for a few minutes to let the attention go inside after doing the techniques and feel this. And to take a moment during the day, it doesn't take very many seconds. We felt it here with just a few seconds. And in the evening after the meditation, to feel this sweetness again. It's really so precious. Now, she said, to say the same thing during the day when things go right and when things go wrong. So, I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. She said, when we are happy, when we are sad, to go on saying the same thing. It can be a refrain that goes on in our minds all the time. You can vary it, I love you, or I love you, or I love you. And this helps us during the day to take advantage of the difficulties that come along. Sometimes when we're doing counseling, people complain, this is going wrong in my life, this is going wrong in my life, this is. Sometimes when they unload a lot of things like that, I interrupt and say, by any chance, when you were up in the astral, did you pray or make a wish to work off a lot of karma in this life? It is astounding the number of times they say, oh, yes. Then why are you complaining to me, you know? There's a story about when the Mahabharata war was over and things had settled down and Krishna was ready to go back. He then was taking leave of all the Pandava brothers, and then he went to Kunti and he said, let me leave now, I must go back. And she said to him, bless me that we will always have difficulties. And then she said, because our minds will always be on you. And so we can take a great personal benefit from the activities that happen, the things that happen in our daily lives, through all the problems that we have to go through. And as monastics, we know the difficulties that people face. There are very heavy financial responsibilities and difficulties. There are accidents, there are illnesses, fatalities. There are lots of personal problems, family problems. Life is really difficult. Were you one of the ones that said they're up there in heaven, let me work it all out this life? At least we're working off a lot of karma. Dhyamata said we should rub our hands together and say, oh, I'm growing. So it's not only in meditation that we can have the personal relationship with God. It's in all the things that happen during the day. And this is a big help in keeping our personal relationship with God. If we can keep our consciousness up here in the spiritual life through the day. Again, Guruji gave so many times the advice to the disciples when they came into his presence with the problem, just keep your attention here. And very quickly, I just mentioned four major things that happen through the day as we try to keep our attention here. Imagine that we have a center of consciousness that's coming up and down the spine, and let's grab it and put it up the spine, and grab it and put it down the spine. Now, everything changes in the body depending on where the consciousness is. If the consciousness is up here, the powers in all the chakras are positive, good powers. So that's one thing. It's different in the body. Then the senses perceive in a very positive way. And then the organs of action act in a very positive way. And our personality will be different. It'll be positive. Now, if the center of our consciousness comes down, then the powers in our chakras change to negative powers. The senses perceive the world differently, in a more negative way. And the organs of action do negative things. We punch somebody instead of doing something positive. And then our personality is different. So in order to develop, keep our relationship, it said Guru is always present in the spiritual eye of the disciple. So through the day, we try to keep our presence with the Guru up here. Let's take an affirmation together. And the affirmation is, dear Father, whatever conditions confront me, do you remember that one from Metaphysical Meditations? Let's say it all together so that we're saying that through the day now, we're going to try to remain positive. Let's say it together. Dear Father,
dear Father,
whatever conditions confront me,
I know that they
represent
the next step
in my unfoldment.
I will welcome all tests
because I know
that within me
is the intelligence to understand
and the power
to overcome.
Om.
Amen. Now there's another thing that is a tremendous help when we have difficulties, and that's to use the Guru the way Arjuna did in the Bhagavad Gita. This is so thrilling to me. In chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita, it's really Arjuna giving complaint after complaint after complaint. Now, this is a long-time super devotee. So it's okay. How many are long-time devotees here? What surprises us sometimes is in counseling to talk with long-time devotees, and they very sheepishly admit, I've been a member of the fellowship for 20 years, and then they mention some problem they're having, as if they're supposed to not have any problems anymore. That's what I thought when I moved to Encinitas Ashram Center as a novice. Well, you know, Things may not rust here. The paint may never need to be painted again. I'm in heaven. And the very first tape, reel to reel, you know, a long time ago, was from Diamata, and she said, and I almost asked him to stop the tape. I think I went back and played it afterwards. The Guruji said, "Problems we will always have." And I said, "Play that again? I thought we were getting rid of the problems." And then she said, "He said to keep the mind in God." But anyway, what we're recognizing here is that we have very serious problems. And it's a tremendous help to do what Arjuna did with Lord Krishna, because he went and he poured out all his complaints. And Lord Krishna was the perfect counselor. He didn't say, "Oh, naughty, naughty, you shouldn't think like this, don't say that, that's bad." He didn't say that at all. He just let him keep dumping it all out. And for 18 verses or more, Arjuna went complaint after complaint after complaint. This is a long time, beautiful, beautiful devotee. Finally, he says, "I quit," you know. And he says, "With my inner nature overshadowed by weak sympathy and pity, with a mind in bewilderment about duty." Now he's laying full out before Krishna. He said, "I implore thee to advise me, what is the best path for me to follow? I am thy disciple. Teach me, whose refuge is in thee." It is such a help to us in our personal relationship with God and with Guru to, if necessary, lie flat out on the floor. And this can be long-time devotees and say, "Lord, I'm so confused, I don't know the way. I don't know which way is up. Help me." As a monk one time, I went down and at lunchtime I knelt in my room and just said, "Help, I need help." And my mind was disturbed about a lot of things. And it was as if, just like Sister Gyanamata says, the window opening in the hot room and the cool, refreshing breeze blowing in. So it's such a wonderful thing to surrender before God, before the Guru, and this can come at any point in sadhana. Mrilina Mata told us one day, "It seems that you have found your deepest surrender, but then there's another level of depth and another level, and how wonderful it is." And then what the Guru does, then the Guru uplifts the devotee. Someone had taken Kriya, and then his life got very far from the path. And for about 20 years, he went through all sorts of difficulties. And then I met him after he had come out of the difficulties. And he said his life had reached a point where, because he got into drugs, all my friends were dead or in jail. And I was in hell, and I knew I was there, and I knew I would never get out. And then he said, as I thought that, the thought went through my mind, but I still have a guru. And as the thought went through his mind, the understanding came with it of how he'd gotten into the difficulty and how to get out of it. And now he was helping others get out of it. So surrendering to the guru calling is such a personal thing. The guru is more alive on earth now than when he left his body. We visited Bogota, Colombia, a long time ago, and the monks had not been there for 12 years. I think it was Brother Kripananda and I walked in to the meditation center. The devotees were there. We were hit by the vibration, just the thick presence of God and Guru. And another time in Dominican Republic, I was sitting there for an interview, and a lady came rushing up the stairs, came and sat down, holding the lesson in her hand. I'm on lesson 13, and master this, and master that, and my life has changed, and everything is so wonderful. And I was just looking at her in awe, saying, isn't this awesome? It's the devotee and the lesson and the guru. And she's only on lesson 13 or something like this. This is alive. And more on earth, this is happening. The same thing is happening direct with all these devotees. It's absolutely thrilling. Just getting back to the activities of our life, how to make them personal. We try to do our duties to try to please God, bring that into our actions. There are different kinds of ways we can act. We can act selfishly for ourselves. We can act for our families. We can act to please God. One day, we were in a little interview with Dayamada, maybe 10 monks, and I was thinking, I don't have love for God. It must have been before I did the affirmation. But I was thinking I would like to please God. And she said, she interrupted what she was saying, and she said, the desire to please God ripens into love for God. So then, if we can act with love for God in our hearts, finally we'll come to a state where eventually we'll perceive that God is the doer. And we know that people are so busy, we can try to take quick dips into God. And I'd like to end with just two little stories of trying to take a dip into God in not the ideal situations. They both took place in Calcutta. And we monks try to meditate together as a group in the morning and in the evening. My evenings were with a different group of people at the corner of Esplanade in Calcutta, all the buses and the mobs of people, and I was alone and I was trying to get back to the ashram. And without going into the whole story, I got on the bus, probably the wrong bus, as one of the Indian devotees told me. She saw me through the crowd and I was on the wrong bus, but couldn't tell me I was going. Bouncing all the way down to the end, finally sitting down on the seat, half a seat, one spring instead of two. Not being able to find the spine, you know, to do Kriya, just mentally even. In other words, we know what it's like to be busy, to not have the ideal situations. We do it anyway. We'll do Kriya mentally, standing in the airport if necessary. So here I was trying to do it, and then I realized I'm having my group meditation with a different group of people. The monks are having arati with the beautiful incense. The Ganges is there. The sailboats are going down as the sun is setting. But I was having my group meditation. Another morning, and this was the first time that I levitated. I'll correct that. It was the only time that I levitated. And this was in the morning. And I had to go very early into Calcutta. So I did the techniques in my room, but I didn't have time for this loving relationship with God. So I was alone, and I went to the bus station at Dakshineswar, and that's the end of the line. The bus starts there, and then it goes into Calcutta. And I got there for the first run in the morning. Now, all the other buses that I'd ever seen, Indian buses, were filled with people, people bulging out the back, the bus often tilted to one side like this, and the bumper just, you know, an inch or two from the road like this, is the, like looked like a beehive with people on it, just. But this time, one of the greatest miracles, the bus was absolutely empty. I didn't know buses could be empty in India. And there was just the driver, the ticket taker, and me. So I went to the back of the bus. I wanted just to not pay any attention to them. And I went into the back left-hand corner, and it was a little bit rounded. And I had a chudder with me, a piece of cloth like this that I folded, and put it just at my head there and laid the head at the back and said, let me just pretend that I'm sleeping so they won't know what I'm doing. And then I began to practice, I love you, Lord. I love you, Lord. And I just forgot everything else. Now, the Indian buses can be very noisy because they're built with big, heavy springs because they got to carry all these people. So when they're empty, they really, you know, they really make a lot of noise. And the windows do not have rubber around them. It's just heavy glass rattling in these metal frames like this, you know. So very, very noisy. But the attention went within, and I wasn't aware of any noise at all. And the attention just for some reason became very absorbed in the loving, completely absorbed in the loving relationship with God. And that's when I levitated. And I became aware that I was up in the air. And what had really happened is that the inhabitants along the road, I guess, really did not like the fact that in the early morning this bus driver would go really fast with his empty bus down their street. So they had built one of these speed bumps. And I was at the back of the bus, and as this wheel went over the bump, it threw me up in the air. And this was my great and only experience of levitation. There is a moral to the story, which is applicable to everyone whose family has a television set, or children playing in another room, or neighbors, or whatever, that devotion, as well as the techniques, is very interiorizing. And we don't need the perfect time, and we don't need the perfect place. But whenever we can grab it, our lives are very busy, we have all sorts of difficulties, and that is what makes these teachings so wonderful. Because we have been given so many ways to make this relationship with God personal. Whatever the situation in life, wherever we are, whatever the rush of time, we can always have this deep, loving, personal relationship with God. We can take quick dips. So let's take a quick dip now. And just very simply, very sweetly, we can hum or if we want, we can sing the words. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and be all drunk with thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all drunk with 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 thy name. And let us just affirm together silently, I love thee, Lord, I love thee, Lord, at your own rhythm.